The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This week, we're talking fees. Now, it's been largely unfashionable to lever fees against customers in the banking space, particularly in the United States. But the struggle to go from a no-fee environment to a fee environment is one of the great challenges for retail banks. I remember back in the early 90s in Australia when the first bank started to put in monthly fees, management fees they used to call them, account keeping fees for accounts. There was a huge pushback. But essentially at that stage, the bank started to position, if you want to use our services over the counter, it's very expensive, you're going to have to pay a fee. Or if you use just the ATMs and, later on the internet, then we won't charge you, for using these services. Of course, here in the United States, in September of 2011, we had a big attempt from one of the majors, Bank of America, putting out a $5 monthly debit card fee. And this was at the time of the Occupy movement and a whole lot of stuff going on. So the pushback on this was massive. So what essentially happened, due to the crowd, the feedback from customers, within just by November, September, they announced that they were going to start charging monthly fees next year. And by November, Bank of America was forced to withdraw this plan because of pushback. Now, having said that, the reality is that 45% of checking accounts in the United States today are unprofitable, and another 20 to 30% are marginal. We covered that off a couple of weeks ago in our show with Serge Millman and Ron Shevlin. So we have a problem. We have lower margins. We have a low interest rate environment. We're not making money on these accounts. Something has to give. Where is the revenue going to come from? Customers have said they don't want to pay fees, but is the bank going to say at some point, we don't want you as a customer because you're costing us too much money? Then we have prepaid cards which are going off in the United States gangbusters, but these charge fees. So this is not a very straightforward environment. This is not a clear-cut answer. This is what I thought we would get into today. So we've got one of our regular guests back on the show this week, Jim Maroos. Jim, tell us about the organization you work for and what you do there, just for those that aren't familiar with your work.
Yeah, I'm the Senior Vice President of Corporate Development for New Control, which is a direct and digital marketing agency out of Chicago, Illinois. We also have an office in San Francisco. In addition, I'm the publisher of the Bank Marketing Strategy blog.
And where are you based, Jim?
I'm actually based out of Cleveland, Ohio.
Right, but you spend a lot of time on the road, right?
I do.
So tell me about your take on this question of fees. We see generally, particularly in the United States market, if you're going to try and introduce a checking account fee, you're going to have a struggle. Although most checking accounts actually have fees attached to them right now today. So what's the problem with this? Why do we have an issue with trying to have a basic fee service on a checking account?
Well, there's a couple of challenges. First of all, As you mentioned, while most banks right now do have fees on their checking accounts, there's a number of ways to have those waived. So while the banks get a lot of publicity around the fees they charge, somewhere close to 80% of the households really either eliminate fees or are having them waived because of other relationships, possibly a direct deposit, other stipulations the bank puts on them. So overall, the amount of fees generated from what we'll call checking account fees is still not very large, even though many of the banks that previously had offered what we'll call no stipulation fee checking have gone to a fee-based service. What's the challenge for a lot of the banks right now is the fact that, as you mentioned, with the narrowing spreads in the interest rate margin, as well as the reduction in fees caused by government regulation, both overdraft fees and interchange income fees, that overall the banks are caught between a rock and a hard place, and they have to look at a brand new model around banking growth, which will probably include, they've already done quite a bit of cost cutting, but will probably include additional fees, but not as you would consider, as you mentioned, the ones that are protested against, those that are just on basic services, but those for enhanced services, those for services that are for emerging financial services that are not right now, maybe on the customer's radar, but will ones that they've been shown to value and put some, be willing to pay for.
So, Jim, you mentioned there some of these new products that are emerging and different approach. So let's explore that for a moment. I did note that during this whole B of A fee structure thing, that Chase did successfully launch a product with a fee, which was their prepaid card called Liquid. The fee is a $4.95 a month, flat monthly fee. They have access to 20,000 ATMs, which are feeless withdrawal and so forth. So there are people that are launching products with fees attached. What are the sort of products that you're seeing where banks are trying to get some additional revenue outside of the traditional checking account structure?
I think you just brought up a very good one, the prepaid card. A lot of the market for the prepaid card are those people that have gone in the past to check cashing facilities that charge an exorbitant sum of money in order just to do basic banking or just to cash a check. And with a prepaid card, with an automatic deposit into a prepaid card account that's reloadable, a customer has the convenience of a regular bank account without the high fees of a check cashing facility. So there's one example. Another example would be what Regions Bank and U.S. Bank have done with regard to their remote deposit capture or their mobile check capture, where you can take a picture of a check and have it deposited into your account. What's nice about that is that both these banks have found that by providing that convenience, they're able to charge a relatively small fee per transaction for a customer that would usually have had to go to a bank or go to an ATM, but now can make the deposit at their home.
Okay, now one of the challenges I think here is that to offset the cost of free checking, banks had to have a whole range of other products, right? One of those products is credit cards. And, obviously, credit cards are a high income product or a big revenue generator for banks. But people are moving to debit cards more frequently now and using less credit cards. And even on the credit card side, we had to have these elaborate reward programs or cashback programs to get you actually to use these very high interest rate products. So, where's the mix here in terms of pricing that gets the right revenue to make a customer not necessarily profitable, but at least break even, versus actually being able to retain customers who are used to a very low cost platform?
That's a great question. I think a study just came out today that was conducted by TD Bank that showed that one of the major reasons for customers leaving their bank are still fees. But most of the fees that they mention are things such as checking account fees that you referenced earlier, on other or outside the network ATM fees, and charges that customers believe are exorbitant for what they believe to be the value presented. And I think Dr. Geller will show in the second part of this program that there are a number of products that people put a much higher value on. Mobile deposit capture, the ability to take a picture of a check and have it deposit your account is one of those that really is a great convenience for a customer that they're willing to pay a nominal fee for. In addition, there's other services such as identity theft. And even advisory services or a PFM, personal financial management services, and alerts that can all be possibly either charged for individually, kind of like a menu item type option, or could be bundled with other services to provide an added value to the customer. So I think that the challenge is for banks to build a products and services that will add more value to the equation, and then will allow the customer to feel like they're getting a fair return on their monthly service charge. And I think that's the key. I think the customers understand the logic behind why they'd be paying a fee, and also have the option of not paying it, where it's not something that's just put across everybody equally, but the person has the ability to make a choice as to whether or not they want to buy it or not. I think, you know, the analogy I use sometimes is when you're buying a new car. You can buy the stripped-down version of the car. Not many people do. Or you can buy a car with a number of different options that are built based on what your belief of what you want that transportation to be. So it may not be the same as it is for me and you or for anyone else, but what it is, it's customized to the individual customer group or to a segment.
So I presume when you talk about identity theft, people aren't paying for identity theft, they're paying for identity theft prevention.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah,
and just
for the
bank of humor.
Exactly.
Yeah, bank of humor there, ha ha. So this is interesting. So tell me about, in terms of these models, I get the analogy. I mean, I think about it like maybe the U.S. Postal Service. I can send a very low cost envelope across the country, but if I want to send something securely and quickly, then I've got to go to a FedEx or something like that. So even a basic thing like a check deposit or sending money, there is an analogy where you can there's a free service, but if you want the service, if you want to deposit your checks at home, which is going to save you driving down the car and using, getting in the car and driving down the branch is going to cost you at least a couple of bucks in gas and then your time. There is a real, very real cost to that. So tell me, what are you seeing in terms of the take up for organizations like this that charge for these services? Are they getting lower acceptance of check cashing as a function or lower usage versus someone who doesn't charge for this?
I think what we're seeing is that if the customer is given an option, so for instance, is given the option between a quick processing, a rapid processing, or a normal processing, then the customer has a choice of not getting charged for, let's say, remote deposit capture or mobile check deposit, or they have the ability to get, the analogy of the Postal Service is a great one because standard delivery of that check may be 5 to 10 days. A rapid delivery of that deposit may be 3 days or 2 days, where the funds are available quicker, and the customer is willing to pay for that. And again, we're not in this case talking about an exorbitant fee, but being able to give the customer choice has not shown to impact the take up rate. And in fact, U.S. Bank is one of the banks that has a very, very high number of checks that they process on a monthly basis through mobile check capture. And I think what they've found is that by giving a customer an option, by charging for those additional services, another one is mobile bill pay, that bring an added convenience to the customer. That the customer, again, if given the choice and ability to make a decision as to whether or not that is a charge that they want to absorb or take up, that they're getting a very good take-up rate and, in this case, generating revenue, which is very important today, especially when you consider the fact that when you look at cost savings, which is the other way to make the income statement balance sheet makes sense, is that the cost savings, there's not many more options available besides, as we've discussed on previous shows, closing the branches, laying off people, and cutting back services.
So in the couple of minutes before we go to break here, tell me about, there's obviously clearly, banks like Chase and so forth that have done these models, US Bank you mentioned, but, we have, thousands of community banks and credit unions which are still married to this free checking model and don't have a lot of innovation in terms of these new revenues or new pricing models. So why are these smaller, community banks and the credit unions so slow to follow the success of these, alternative pricing ancillary revenue models?
And something you've discussed previously on the show, I think it's a balancing act between the ability to innovate and stay ahead of the digital consumer who's going to want more, or the ability to be a price leader. And I think, again, it's different business models, that if you can't stay ahead on the innovation scale, you may have to stay ahead on the pricing scale. And I would dispute the fact that you can even make money in banking, giving away the services totally for free while you're trying to maintain a branch network and all the other services that you're trying to do as a smaller community bank. There's a lot of costs involved. The new neobanks, as we like to call them on the show, the Simple, the Movins, the Go Banks, there's no branch model that they have to support, which makes it a little bit easier to make it so that you can make money without all the additional charges. But even then, you're making the decision as to do you have in your does a consumer have in their requirements a broad branch system as one of their requirements, an innovative digital model as one of the requirements. What does each consumer want? I think what you see is the smaller banks, and credit unions as well, one of the few benefits that they can have is a pricing advantage. And so It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jim, stick around. After the break, we're going to come back with Dr. Dan Geller. We're going to continue to talk about this issue of generating new revenue and value-added services. We'll be back right after the break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics. Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We're talking fee structures. We're talking retail banking fees, free checking account, or prepaid cards, and this issue of generating new revenues on traditional bank accounts, which are increasingly, in the current economic environment, struggling to reach profitability or break even. How are banks going to keep their head above water for the basic account or the basic customer relationship? It's my pleasure to introduce to the show Dr. Dan Geller. Dan's the Executive Vice President at Market Rates Insight. Dan, tell us about MRI and tell us about your role there.
Well, thank you, Brent, and hello, Jim. Market Rates Insight is one of the major provider of competitive analysis for financial institutions on pricing. My role is to head up the research and analysis initiatives for the company. And definitely the whole fee area is a major area that we handle. And I think your timing as far as the discussion on this issue is perfect.
So where are you calling in from today, Dan? Where are you based?
We are based in the San Francisco Bay Area, right outside San Francisco. This is where our main office is.
Okay, and most of your business is online, or?
Yes, I mean we have an interactive pricing system that is available to all of our customers nationally. We obviously service banks and credit union nationally, and they log into our system and they pull reports and conduct analysis on competitive pricing. Absolutely.
Okay, so. In terms of the research you've done, what does the research tell you in respect to the likelihood that a customer is willing to pay fees for these additional services, mobile check deposit capture, identity theft protection, things that Jim was talking about, or acceptance of the fact that banking as a service is no longer going to be free and I'm going to have to pay? What do you think the level of consumer acceptance is for this changing environment?
But you hit the nail right on the head, because one of the main reasons we conducted this consumer study on emerging financial services is because we wanted to see, is it really true that consumers resent and resist fees? And what we uncovered is substantial. Although consumers resist fees, they don't resist all fees. Some fees are very welcome, and that's where we distinguish between traditional fees, such as, let's say, ATM fees or NSF fees, and emerging financial services. Those are the services that add value to the consumer's lifestyle, and therefore they are very willing to pay a fee for that because of the added value. So this is kind of an important distinction that consumers are willing to pay for added value services, and this was the focus of the study. We basically focused on 13 emerging financial services, such as some of them you mentioned earlier, mobile deposit service and identity theft alerts and credit scoring and others. Those services help consumers with the new and busy lifestyle. If we take, for instance, mobility. Mobility is definitely a new lifestyle. I mean, every day more and more people are doing more things online, mobily, on the iPhones or tablet devices. There is the issue of efficiency. We are all getting busier, and unfortunately, the number of hours in a day don't grow. I mean, it is a finite number of hours. So we need to figure out how to do things more efficiently, and you know, banking is definitely one of the things that we want to make more efficient. And then there is the issue, you touched on it earlier with Jim, the whole issue of digital security. That's an area that has a growing concern. As you probably know, the whole issue of digital identity theft and digital crime is the number one crime in America nowadays as far as the monetary damage that it does. So it's on the mind of many customers, how can they enhance the digital security of their transactions and identity.
I think, yeah, that makes sense to me, because when movie theaters or cinemas first started offering online booking, they would often give you a choice. You know, you could choose the time the movie you wanted to see, you could book the ticket, but there was often a booking fee. Right.
And there still is today, actually. You know, they still charge these fees, and we gladly pay them because, you know, there's a time value to this. You know, the uncertainty of standing in the line, whether I was going to get the ticket. For some of these cinemas, I actually choose my seat when I book the ticket. So all of that is worth, that investment in that booking fee, as well as the convenience factor. So, Dan, my question to you is this, is in respect to the research you've done, is there a certain level of fee structure that customers are willing to absorb for these features? So, you know, is it the $1 to $2 to $5 range, or, you know, is there a certain level of acceptance or, willingness, but if it gets to a certain point, then, well, you know, I'm not willing to pay for it. It was the research that specific?
Yes, absolutely. And this is an excellent question because it really touches on one of the main findings from the study, which I believe will have some tremendous ramifications on how fees are going to be structured in the future. So the answer to your question is yes. We found out that there is a very strong and positive relations between the level of importance of a service and the value of the service. In other words, the higher the importance of the service, the higher the fee that consumers are willing to pay. And this finding basically gives validations and a foundation to the whole concept of higher fee for higher level of service. And when it comes to emerging financial services, we are already seeing this type of, I call it basically tiered fee model being implemented. One case in point, which is kind of in the public domain, so we can talk about it, Regions Bank just basically introduced a tiered fee schedule for the mobile deposit. And basically, if a customer would like to make a mobile deposit and have funds availability within 2 business days, then the fee is minimal, 50 cents per deposit. But the customer also has the option to have funds availability the same day, and then there is a higher fee for that. And in addition, they can basically opt to have immediate funds availability for a slightly higher fee. So this tiered fee schedule is basically it basically supported by the research and what customers said that they would like to see in the future.
So, on average, how much do you think banks are leaving on the table? These community banks and the credit unions we spoke about, how much are they leaving on the table by not charging for these sort of services that you've already indicated consumers are willing to pay for? Could you quantify that?
Yes, I could, but I'm going to give general kind of average numbers because...
Sure.
Those figures vary by size of institution and type. And that's why in our study, we basically provided separate analysis for, let's say, national banks, regional banks, community banks, banks separate from credit union and credit union separate for banks because of the variations. So I will give you those figures, but remember those are kind of average across the board. So basically, the simplest way for any institution to figure out or to estimate how much potential is there for fees from emerging financial services in their institution is if they take 50% of their customers, whatever number of customers they have, 50% times $120 annually. This is kind of the top amount, top potential revenue from emerging financial services. We found out that, and we can talk about this a little later if you want, about the whole principle of bundling, that by bundling certain services, institutions can generate an average of $10 per month in fees on emerging services, which makes up...
$10 per month per customer?
Yes, $10 per month. Per customer, which makes up the $120 a year annually per customer. So, bottom line, the potential for fee revenue on average is about 50% of your customers at $120 annually over time. This doesn't happen overnight, of course. Over time, that's the level that you should reach potentially if you do everything right.
So that's a big shift. I mean, you've got a lot of customers who are currently in the not profitable space, as we spoke about the measures, about 45% of customers today. There's a lot of customers who are now suddenly potentially profitable off these cross-sell or upsell of these other services. One other thing, do you have a view on, I mean, we're starting to see, particularly the Gen Ys, they don't have the loyalty or stickiness to a primary financial institution like their parents did. Now, some banks are hopeful that when they come along and they need a mortgage, that will change and they'll start to centralize. But my view is a little different. The challenge, of keeping people engaged across these, different cross-sell, upsell opportunities is going to be a real challenge. So, in respect to these relationships that we've got, do you see that we're going to be able to leverage off that? Do you see that we're going to be able to continue this primary FI relationship and these fees will be great? Or are people going to start picking and choosing relationships based on, sort of a bundled approach or the value they get from the overall relationship?
That's another... very relevant question and issue. And basically what we see from the study is that financial institutions need to do a paradigm shift in the way they look at relationship with customers on the basis of services. And here is what I mean. There is such a strong desire for those emerging financial services that they will define the relationship moving forward, especially with younger generations, because certain emerging financial services are extremely important to them. So, in other words, moving forward, financial institutions need to look at financial services as the main bond between them and customers and everything else secondary. And let me give you some empirical example. If we do the study that we did allows you to conduct risk-benefit analysis on certain services. In other words, if an institution asks, what is the risk-reward of offering, let's say, mobile deposit capture? So the risk is that if you, and again, this is on average, it varies by size and type of institution, but on average, if you do not provide mobile deposit capture these days, you are at the risk of losing about 3.5% of your customer base over time.
Right, it's a hygiene factor, right? You pretty much have to have it.
I'm sorry, Brett?
You pretty much have to have it. It's a hygiene factor these days.
Yes, yes, it is. So the risk would be losing about 3.5% of your customers over time. And on the other hand, the reward is that if you do offer mobile deposit services, you will have about 10.4% customers who will sign up for this service initially. They will be the early adopters. So you can see that that's a no-brainer. That's really a no-brainer. And that's why such an empirical study that we did is so helpful, because you can conduct all this analysis and make decisions in really the right decisions for your institution.
Okay, Dan. Well, listen, after the break, we're going to get Jim back to join us, and we'll talk a little bit about the longer view. Let's talk about sort of 5 to 10 years in the future. You can stick around?
Oh, sure, sure.
Great, great. So we'll be back right after this break, and we'll be talking, you know, what is the future of this revenue fee question. Be back right after this break. You're with Brett King on Breaking Banks.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Want to be empowered to take your leadership skills to the next level in your business? Tune into A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success, with host Angela Sharp. Using industry-specific materials, toolkits, and expert guests from all facets of business, our program will empower you to develop a strong core in your business leadership, infrastructure, growth, and technology. A Sharp Outlook airs live every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. Remember, our hashtag is breaking banks, make sure you participate on Twitter. There's some good commentary coming through. Lots of passion about the fee structure issue. It's one of these things where you're always going to say, you know, you're always going to have consumers say they aren't willing to pay for anything. But the reality is, we're showing that the data is showing us it's a little different to that. So Jim and Dan, what I like to do in this part of the show, as you guys will be familiar, is I like to look at 5 to 10 years in the future. Now, one of the things that's really interesting at the moment is we see, we hear rumors of the smartwatches launches and things like that. You know, we hear about the Android smartwatch, Samsung Gear, and these sorts of technologies coming out, and Google Glass. So we see a lot more of this technology becoming more seamlessly integrated into our life. It's obviously clear that within a very short period of time, certainly within the next 10 years, that the basic bank account itself is going to be quite different. It's going to be embedded maybe in our phone, so that our phone is our bank account. We have our balance there, but it's also our payment device. So as these sorts of technologies start to come into place, how is that fee structure going to translate? How is loyalty going to translate? Let's think 5 to 10 years out. Now, I don't want you guys to think like a bank right now in terms of taking an existing checking account and trying to just bundle some fees on top of that. Think outside of the box here. 5 to 10 years out, you know, your bank account is embedded in your phone or embedded, connected to you digitally. This is probably a fairly likely scenario. So what's the how are we going to be looking at bank products and services from a fee, revenue, and customer retention perspective? Jim, do you want to start off with that one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot different in that when we start to look at the phone as not just a banking device, but more importantly, a payment device, you start to integrate the consumer, the merchant, and the bank almost as one. And we're starting to see that a little bit with merchant-funded rewards, but right now the friction and the clunkiness, for lack of a real good phrase, around the reward structure really hasn't taken hold. Bank of America is probably the closest, but I think even they would say that the need to opt into rewards and then to take advantage of rewards, it's just not smooth. I think we're going to see possibly as early as the early part of next year much more of a geolocational capability where the offers and the bank account and the spending and the merchant rewards program will all be integrated into one, which is, I think, the stepping stone or the foundation where we will eventually have really a very close integration between the merchant and the commercial accounts of a bank as well as the consumer accounts of the bank, where I think the fee structure possibly could be offset by revenues that are generated by the relationship with merchants. So instead of the consumer bearing the whole load for the consumer account, possibly by opting into different types of reward structures, the consumer will be able to have the merchant absorb some of the cost of the bank relationship. And there may actually be a revenue option for not only the customer, but for the merchant as well. So that, you know, in the future, you might see a situation where because of the reduction of friction of a merchant and payment process, that you'll see rewards spread where it's almost like a reverse interchange, where you're going to be able to see consumers get rewards every time they make a purchase with their bank account based on the relationship the bank has with the merchants, and in effect, the merchant is able to get sales at a lower cost. So I think you're going to see a really tight integration of all three of those elements and all three of those segments.
So you're talking about almost like a bank account ecosystem that, you know, at right now what we say is, you know, this bank account, this value store we've got sort of lives and die on the fact that you deposit money and you have this value store. But the real where mobile is taking this is that bank account has more value when it's contextual, when it knows, you know, your use of your money is highly contextual based on, your friends that you're eating out with, where you shop, regularly, where you live, where you go to work, and all of those elements, if banks can build an ecosystem around that, it's no longer about just storing your cash or giving you interest on that cash or where you make payments. It now becomes this ecosystem of how you deploy your money as an asset, and you know that is with better deals, better rewards. It really becomes this payment sounds like a lot bigger part of this value to the banking system.
It is, and I think, you know, as we discussed before, I think the challenge is until the value is provided, until the consumer and the merchant both believe they're getting a much better deal, at least in the U.S., the payment system is going to continue the same. And I think when you start to make it look like an ecosystem, and that ecosystem may also include, you know, when you start looking at wearable technology, may also include healthcare information. So, you know, when you start to combine the consumer's complete profile, when you start looking at not only the financial profile, but the medical profile and the healthcare profile, you really get into some interesting things and things that banks right now don't do. But between the banks and the healthcare system have the back office structure and the information technology to be able to drive possibly the merger of both elements.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting. Dan, what are your thoughts? 5-10 years out, what's this ecosystem? What does it look like? What are we paying for? Where's the value of the banking system in the hands of a consumer in 5 to 10 years' time? And where's the who's making the money out of this?
Let me start by saying that if I were to advise financial institutions about how to handle the future, so to speak, it will be threefold. The first one is start now, otherwise you'll miss the revolution, because we are really now in the early stages of, so to speak, revolution in the way, in the relationship between consumers and financial institutions. The second advice would be to really migrate towards empirical research and data, and not to make the decisions based on intuitive feelings or anecdotal cases, because those are very costly and often wrong. And the third one would be probably the most important, and that is not to focus so much on the details, on the instruments, being it iPhone or Google Glass, but to focus on the need of the customer. So if we look at the need as mobility, that's where the focus is, because everything else will change. Today it's a tablet. Tomorrow it's going to be a watch. Albert Einstein once said something very true. He said, I want to know God's thoughts. Everything else is details. So every banker should take that and say, I want to know my consumer's thoughts.
Customer's thoughts.
Everything else is details. And it's absolutely true. Technology is going to change. The mobile devices will change, and we'll wear them, and who knows what we're going to do with them. But the need for mobility is going to stay with us. And that's where the focus should be, to think about how do I maintain relationship, value-added relationship with my consumers and new consumers down the road, regardless of the actual instrument, the detail, but mobility, and there is efficiency. How do I increase the efficiency of customers? You know, when it comes to mobile deposit, it's not just mobility, it's efficiency. You can conduct the transaction from your kitchen table in 1 minute rather than driving around and looking for a branch or ATM. That's efficiency, time efficiency, money efficiency. And then, of course, we talked earlier about the whole issue of digital security. And so those and others are the needs of the customers moving forward. And if I were a financial institution, I would really start looking at a set of new needs and wants that are coming on board and start to lay the ground of how to provide services to my customers that will satisfy those needs. Because this will define the relationship in the future between financial institutions and consumers.
Now, this is a very interesting discussion. So let me ask you this question. We've talked a little bit about where the revenue is going to come from. Let me ask you now this question. Because this is quite a non-traditional approach to the problem of customer engagement and revenue collection for customers, what are going to be the skill sets that banks need to acquire? You know, what sort of people are they going to need to make this shift over the next 5 to 10 years? We're talking about a lot of non-traditional revenue sources that actually become the difference between a customer being profitable or not. So this sounds like a very strategic area. So what's the skill set? Where would you invest as a bank? Jim, you want to have a shot at that first?
Well, the foundation of all this is going to be data. None of these fees or none of these charges are going to be able to be assessed across the board, and they're not going to be accepted the same across the board. So understanding individual customers is going to be imperative. And so I think, you know, and it's probably a theme we've had in almost all of your shows, is that, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be all about, as Dan said, understanding your customers. But to understand your customers, you have to understand them in a complete sense, not just what their checking account is or what their credit card is or what their mortgage is or what their small business relationship is, but what the 360 view of that customer is. And with that, you'll be able to do better pricing models, better segmentation models, and better product development models. But I think at the end of the day, the thing that's going to be most important are the people that are going to be able to analyze and interpret that data to determine those segmentations. And probably even more fundamental than that is the people that are going to be able to install the new systems, because I think we've discussed also that there are a lot of old, antiquated systems that are running a lot of these financial institutions, and they're trying to do a lot of things that they weren't meant to do in the past. And I think these are all at risk when you start looking at putting all these silos of data
together.
Value-added
services, data-driven engagement. Yeah, this is very true. You know, a lot of this data right now is actually there right now. If you look at things like payments data and, you know, what I buy and when I buy it, a lot of this stuff is there, but it's not leveraged because it's all in these buckets or silos. So you're going to have to fix that first of all, right? So Dan, what about your thoughts? What are the skill sets you're encouraging banks to invest in right now?
Well, but clearly they'll need a whole array of skills, because you know, some will be more technically oriented, some will be financial oriented. But overall, I would say greater focus on research and analysis, and as Jim mentioned, not just data mining, which is good, but also primary research with customers. Listen to your customers, find out what they think, what they want, and incorporate that into your decision making. That's paramount. If there is a disconnect between what you do or what you think and what the customer wants and desires, clearly it's not going to work in your favor. So various skill sets will be required, but I would definitely elevate the whole skill set of research and analysis. And it doesn't have to be in-house. You know, it doesn't mean that every financial institution needs to build a whole new unit. They can
need to have access to the services or that capability.
Yes, but to seek it and leverage this and incorporate it into the strategic decision-making, absolutely.
Very good. So thank you, Jim and Dan, for your participation in the show this week. Very, very interesting. Lots of interesting feedback on Twitter, as usual, as well. So thanks very much for joining us. That's the show for this week. Next week, we're going to be talking internet security. Mobile security. There's a lot of talk around, things like fingerprint technology now with the iPhone and such. You know, where is this going to go, and how do we protect ourselves in this mobile banking environment, mobile payments environment? That's the show for next week. You've been listening to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. Thank you for joining us once again.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.